Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in to a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. I am so happy to have our guest today. My guest, former BYU tennis player, former Cougar tennis coach, and now well-known mental strength coach, he is Craig Manning. Craig, thank you so much for taking a few minutes. This is so much fun, and I'm glad you were able to do this.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Appreciate the invitation, and yeah, love it. It's going to be fun.
It's so funny because for years I have been interviewing players here on campus, and your name gets brought up all the time.
Oh, really?
So I hear the name Craig Manning all the time. I was just talking with Craig Manning, or Craig Manning came in and talked with our team today. And I see you around occasionally, but I've never had the chance to go up and introduce myself. So this is the first time that I've had a chance to talk with you, and it is a pleasure for me. So again, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay, so as I mentioned, lots of athletes have been interviewed, and they've talked about the mental edge that they have gained when it comes to competition by talking with you and having these sessions with you. We've heard nothing but praise about your work. What is your reaction when you hear the athletes talk about you and the work that you've helped them with? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I just love the idea of trying to help people maximize and become the most beneficial and effective version of themselves, right? To help them to be super aware of who they are, their strengths, and their skills, and to be able to unlock that so they can try and be the best version of themselves. And so, yeah, it's good to hear that it's making a difference. So, yeah.
It's one of those things where you've been doing this for a couple of decades.
Yeah.
And it's not just at BYU. You've gone into the professional ranks specifically, and probably the most well-known is with the Milwaukee Bucks, helping Giannis Antetokounmpo and other members of the Milwaukee Bucks, the U.S. ski and snowboard teams. When you started down this path, could you have ever imagined it would have gone the way it has?
No, not at all. My father always told me, you got to do what you love. You know, he was an accountant, former tennis player, an accountant, and he just kept telling me to do what you love. And so I was halfway into my accounting degree, and he kept telling me that. And I'm like, well, I love the mind. I love psychology. So I switched into psychology, and I've been on that journey ever since. So, yeah.
Was that something that has always interested you, even as a youngster?
Always. From the time I was young, I remember being a 12-year-old back in Australia playing rugby league, and this guy called Stephen Mendel was this legend player. And I was always like, why is he so good? I'm the same size as him. Why is he so good? And to me, it always came down to the mind. And that, to me, I've always tried to find the edge and what we can do to actually maximize that potential that I keep mentioning. And yeah, so I've always been fascinated by the mind.
As if the accent wasn't a dead giveaway, you mentioned growing up in Australia. Tell us about your upbringing. What was your family like, and what was life like for you growing up?
Yeah, good life, great parents, big tennis family. My dad was this great tennis player, and my uncle played tennis. My older cousin, my younger cousin, they turned pro. My uncle was over all the junior tennis in Australia at one point, so I actually love baseball. Mm-hmm. But this was not a big sport in Australia. But my best friend had grown up in an American embassy in India, and he came back, and we just dominated in baseball. But all I could ever watch were Braves games because that's all we ever saw, and but it wasn't going to get me anywhere. So I focused on tennis and had the infrastructure there, and actually turned pro when I was 17 and went out on the tour, and I thought I was living my dreams at that point. So, yeah, big tennis family and love sports and love the mind, so it made sense to get into sports psych, I guess, down the road.
So when you said that you went pro, is that what took you to Europe?
Yes.
So, yeah. Okay, so you obviously talked about you played high-level tennis during your teenage years. You turned pro, and you go to play in Europe, but then something happened. What happened?
Yeah, now I understand the mind. I was really loved baseball. I was doing tennis because I was good at it, because I had an infrastructure. But the problem is, if you don't figure out what you love and what your talents, which comes back from a talk from President McKay in 1965 of what are you doing with the talents you've been given in the pre-mortal existence, your potential taps out, and you get in this mindset that you're always looking for what's wrong, which is reactive, and needing approval from others, which also puts you into reactive, fear-based. And that's definitely what happened to me. At the time, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I was just struggling and couldn't put language to it at all. But now I can see I got in this fear spiral and was thinking practice makes perfect, which is doesn't. That's completely erroneous. But the more I trained, the worse I got. And so, yeah, 3 years of trying to be a pro just wasn't working too well.
Did you think your tennis career was over?
I did, yeah. And I was just so burned out. I just didn't want to play anymore and took a scholarship offer. I had a few different offers once I looked at the U.S. and this school that said it was the safest campus in the country and all you did is you couldn't drink or smoke, which is fine because I'd never done that, and turned up at BYU and just thought I'd landed on some other planet for a little while there, but loved it ever since I got here.
So what did you know about BYU prior to, other than what you just said, that sort of the bullet points of what BYU can offer here?
Yeah, no, I just all I knew is I couldn't drink and couldn't smoke, and the only thing that I had to give up was coffee, which I loved, and turned up. And the very first day was January 1st, and it was a Sunday, which was Fast Sunday. No idea what any of that meant. The line was so long all the way out the Morris Center back in those days. By the time I actually got my food and sat down, I had a brownie first, which I never had a brownie. And the people around me, three of them, sat down and proceeded to bless the food. And I choked on that brownie because I had no idea what I got myself into, because no one could understand me. I used to have a thick accent back then, and they couldn't understand a word I said because my family's kind of middle class and I was a lot more ochre in my accent. So, yeah, I almost went home the first week. I'm like, this place is not for me. But, yeah, I was met some guys on the team that were just amazing return missionaries and got baptized 6 months later. So
that's what I wanted to ask you about, because you came here. You were not a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but you ultimately decided to convert to the church.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Was that an easy thing for you to do?
Yeah.
Did it take me through that and just kind of how you felt going through that?
I think I'd been – not I think, I know. I'd been looking for truth for a while. I was trying to figure things out. I was struggling on the tour and not enjoying it. And this had been my whole identity, not just something I did. It was my identity. I was Craig the tennis player. And when things were falling apart, I just was looking for meaning in life and asking my dad, our uncle, why do you do the things you do? And I just could not find any answers at all. And to me, I look back and like the Lord saw I was sincerely trying to find truth and find the answers. And it's like he picked me up and brought me over to BYU and showed me the truth. And so I just felt it straight away. And my parents are amazing. They supported me in the decision because they could see it was making me happy. And yeah, it was really just, I'd been looking for it for a long time. And once I found it, I knew what was there. So, yeah.
What role did religion play in your life prior to that? Did you have a relationship with God and with
heaven?
Did that play into your childhood at all?
Well, I grew up in a Catholic, did all of the First Holy Communion, did all of that stuff, stopped going because rugby was on Sundays. So stopped going to church after a while as I got better at rugby league. But yeah, I always believed in God, and I was always, I guess, an obedient child. I never really drank or did anything like that. So I just really felt like I could be myself here. I mean, love Australia, love my friends back there, but you know, I was the designated driver. You know, I was I didn't really ever do any of those things. So I always kind of felt a little bit out of place at times because it just wasn't me. And then came here, I'm like, wait, there's a whole bunch of people around here like me that and my parents said that too. Just felt like it was funny. After the first year and a half I was here, I went home and my best friend who was on the pro tour had come home with an injury, and he was mad as heck at me for joining the church. And he was all saying, it's just mind over matter, and you made a mistake. You got to come back on the tour with me, and I'll pay for you to come on the tour, and you can be my hitting partner and coach. And I came home one day and said to my dad, who's not a member, and I said, Dad, I think I've made a mistake. And he's like, no, you have not made a mistake. I've never seen you more happy and at peace. Don't ever doubt it again. I was like, oh, okay. That's from somebody that's not a member of the church. So that was my dad passed away, but my parents were awesome. So, yeah.
As we get older, I think we all at some point in our lives will look back on the way our lives have progressed, and we can always pinpoint these moments where this was a turning point, whether good or bad.
Right. Yeah.
There are things along the way that you can say, this put me on this path.
Yeah.
What type of a moment in your life was your conversion?
For me, doing camps. I was doing summer camps, teaching summer camps, tennis. We had all these young kids come in. And I'm like, wait, these kids are happy. They're always happy. Where are they getting this happy from? They don't drink. They don't smoke. They're like high on life. I want some of that. And a bunch of returned missionaries that had been on the team had come back, and they would take turns rooming with me, and I'd ask all these questions, and they were able to answer it. And honestly, it was these young kids and just how happy they were. And I'm like, I want some of that. And I think my defensive came down, and I'm like, I want to figure out what's going on here. They're high on something. What are they high on? And wanted to figure it out, and the answers all just come flooding in there for me. Yeah.
All right. Well, you're at BYU, and you've mentioned a couple of times you're playing tennis. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into that and how your playing career turned into a coaching career. Mm-hmm. So we will do that when the Deep Blue Podcast continues right here on BYU Radio. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. My name is Jason Shepherd. Our guest today is Craig Manning, and really enjoying our conversation. And we before the break, we were talking about you being here at BYU. You've converted to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but the reason that you came here was to play tennis. How would you describe your BYU tennis career?
Yeah, I started to get better as I started to figure out the mental stuff. Switched into psychology halfway through. Started taking some psych classes and realized I was a perfectionist and I would always beat myself up and learn some mental skills that helped me to channel my mind a little better. Definitely an overanalyzer and overthinker. And I started to figure it out and started to play really well. But then I was on that journey, loved the mental side of things. And that led to me getting a master's degree from here while I was an assistant coach. And then eventually getting my PhD at the University of Utah while I became the head coach. And I fell in the field of neuroplasticity early in my PhD. That was an emerging field. And that's where you map the brain. And what I learned is from being an athlete, also being a coach, as a coach I learned how to really break it down to the application. But taking the science and applying the principles, the ideas, and turn that into an action, that's I think what was the biggest thing that helped me in my career is the coaching, not just the academics, but the coaching and being an athlete myself. I could break it down into an action and create these mental skills. And all of a sudden, our players just keep getting better. Normally in tennis, if you're not a phenom by 16, people would say it's too late.
Yeah.
But that's not true. Neuroplasticity is the science of the mind is always learning. Just are you in control of that? So we just started developing talent. I say we because my assistant coach was awesome. And she's now the head coach here. And we worked hard and we developed these players and we won 7 championships in 8 years just developing talent because it's not easy to recruit here. It's high altitude. To compete nationally, you've got to recruit globally. But we brought these players in and we just, made them better quickly.
When you look back on going the coaching route, was that something that felt like it was the next natural step? Did that kind of surprise you that you went that direction? Or because of really what you wanted to do in terms of working with athletes, not just physically, but also the mental side, did it just make sense?
I think going back to even President McKay's talk that I mentioned, really one of the biggest things I've found in life is figuring out who you are. What are your real strengths? And how do you develop those? And for me, I'd been coaching since I was 15 to help pay for my tennis addiction, right?
Mm-hmm. So I love how you call it a tennis addiction. I love it.
I was coaching at my best friend's academy, coaching all the time, and that led to even coaching him on the tour a little bit. Then I'm at BYU. They got me to be a graduate assistant. So I've been coaching from such a young age. I really feel like that's one of my biggest strengths is coaching, teaching, which really is teaching, right? And teaching others how to do it. I think I was almost better at coaching than playing myself. So, and then as I'm getting my PhD in performance psych, it was a natural evolution where I like to still call myself a coach. I'm not a counselor, really. I'm able to teach skills and to develop good habits. And that's what I do to this day in the executive world when I'm, working with these pro athletes. I'm more than anything, I'm coaching them on these skills and how to get these skills, muscle memory.
What was the evolution to go from what you were talking about in terms of utilizing it as a coach of tennis mm-hmm. to now kind of, okay, I'm going to move away from that, and now I'm going to get into this full time, and this is going to be what I'm coaching, the mental side of things. Take me through that decision and how you yeah. how you got on that path.
Yeah, thank goodness to my wife. We were doing well there at BYU and had a pretty good living, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I want to make this change, and almost halved our salary. But BYU was super supportive of it, and it was still just coaching. It's hard to make that move. You feel like you're a member of the mafia a little bit, the mob. It's like you try to leave, and everyone's trying to pull you back into it, because I enjoyed it, and I think I was pretty good at it. So, but I really loved the mental side, and pulling away from that, and you know, Coach Mendenhall was really supportive at the time, helped me do some camp stuff that helped us kind of fill in that financial gap there for a while to help us do it. And then working with football there, and then the Olympic team came, and there was a ton of work there. Then Red Bull came, and it just blew up. It blew up so fast. I was really surprised. But at first I'd go, I'd written a book, and I had these hard copy journals to help map the brain. And we'd invested $30,000, and we didn't have much money. My wife, again, super supportive. We took out an equity line, and we got these books, and we had like cases in our garage. And I'd turn up. No one would pay a cent. Everyone wanted to learn about it, but no one would pay a cent. We'd turn up, and I'd sell out a case of books and two cases of journal, and just did that for years. And we had to turn in one of our cars, the minivan, and we're driving this Jeep that we had to leave the top on in the summer so that – because we had to sit the kids on the wheel bases, and we had no seatbelts for them. And so my wife was super supportive, but she always, my wife, my dad, always telling me what to do, what I love, and the Lord's blessed us ever since. So, yeah.
When I talk with athletes, I think the two things, especially recently, and by recently I say the last 3 to 5 years, the two things that I think have changed the most in athletics in general is the reliance on analytics mm-hmm. and the reliance on mental strength.
Yep.
Those are the two things that I think have changed the most in athletics in the last 3 to 5 years. So for everybody that's into athletics now, this is kind of what you know. People talk about mental strength coach yeah. and working on the mind. But that wasn't the case even 10 years ago, let alone 20 years ago when you were starting.
Yeah.
What kind of looks did you get from people when you said this is the area that I want to go, because it was not something that was very prominent at the time?
So I've never really said this to anyone, and I'm glad that you're bringing this up, but I kind of was just this normal human being that was not extreme in any way, had lots of friends and just middle of the run, right? Had friendly with everyone. And then I choose a field, and I knew I was choosing it where I'm kind of the weird one now at times. And people didn't want to talk to me, and I was like on the outside, which had never been my life. But I knew it. I'd seen it. I saw what happened when people worked on the mental, and it was just so obvious. The mind is our operating system. It's the soul of who we are. And if you're not thinking the right way, it doesn't matter about anything else if you don't get the mind right. I saw one of my close friends who I grew up with, who did not make on that Australian team that I did when I got turned pro at 17, 18. He did not make the team. And I saw him getting better and better. And he became the number one tennis player in the world, Patrick Rafter. And I'm like watching my friend going, how on earth are you getting to number one? But his mind was always so good. I knew it was the mind. And all those years of kind of being the weird one, just trying to help people work on the mental, it's just over time, it's to this point, like there's so much work. It's crazy now. But every now and then you get somebody that thinks it's weird. It's not. It's just the mental.
Right.
It's developing skills.
I want to go back to something that you said. You mentioned, you know, Bronco Mendenhall had you work at some camps. That was actually the first time that I had heard the name Craig Manning was okay. when Bronco was the head coach here, because I knew he had utilized, you know, talking with you and Bronco, like anybody that knows Bronco, this is something that Bronco really believes in and has really helped him as he has gone through his coaching journey. What was it like to work with Bronco specifically?
Yeah, he was amazing. He really opened up some doors for me and really got me engaged in everything and gave me total access to everyone on the program while standing on the sidelines, which I don't know anyone that ever was standing on the sidelines in those times. And players would talk to me in between plays. We had a quarterback at one point that had, you know, I need to be a little bit careful what I say, but definitely had some focus issues. And I'm talking to him after every possession to get him dialed in to be able to perform, you know. And it was that sort of level of integration and application that was exhilarating to me because of the impact you can have. And the opportunity he gave was wonderful. And then went so far as just mapping the playbook to make it as efficient as possible so that we could enhance the memory recall of all the players. So, yeah, he opened up the door, and a lot of coaches have from that beginning point. It's really fun when you get to work with coaches that really buy in, because it is a team effort, right? And that's why it's the athlete, the coach, and the sports psych all working together as one to be able to help unlock the potential of these athletes. And I love that collaboration.
Well, and I would imagine, look, if this is not a situation where it's copy and paste with every athlete that you talk to. Everything is based on the individual and the individual's needs. I would assume that's something that really appeals to you, is the individuality of everybody that you talk to.
I absolutely love to build from the individual strength. Actually, when I first started doing it, I called it high performance. But I realized really fast, we're just building robots and machines. This is human performance. And that human element is critical to really help people unlock their potential. And helping people know who they are, their strengths and their gifts, and the skills they've worked on, that is always the beginning point. And everyone's strengths are different. And that's if you don't mind, like I left to go to Milwaukee for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And while I were there, we went through this losing streak just 12 months, a year and a half ago. Through December, we were losing, and our culture wasn't real good at the time. We were trying to solve it, and the coach was doing everything he can to solve it. And this is, I can tell you this because we're at BYU, right? And I'm like, I don't know, what can I do to help this team? We're really struggling. And I had a client that I did a session with that I always do, just a one-on-one business one. And he reminded me of a session that I had actually coached him on from President McKay. I keep coming back to this. And there were six things we'll be judged on in Judgment Day. Number one is how you treated your spouse individually. Number two is how well do you know your kids individually? And then three is what are you doing with those gifts you've been given in the pre-moral existence? So I end up doing one-on-ones because I'm like, the only way I can help these guys is just one-on-ones, helping them dial in around their strengths, help them identify their strengths so we can collaborate again instead of at each other and competing with each other. We won 16 games in a row. And I know, you know, there's a lot of other people involved and we can't take full credit for it. But what I've seen is, man, when we follow those true principles, it works every time. And that was the thing that really got us going in that season again. Everyone just engaged with who they are and embraced their identity. And we stop competing, we start collaborating, and the culture just changes when we do that.
How did you get on the radar of the Milwaukee Bucks? How did that opportunity present itself to you?
So went to working for the U.S. Olympic team up here in Park City all those years. My mentor, Dr. Keith Henschen, brought me into that at the beginning, which was, you know, just more doing it for free to help out. And after Sochi, we did really well. The two teams I was over were snowboarding and freestyle. And we won 9 gold medals total out of all 28 disciplines and 288 athletes. But 6 of those 9 came from our two programs where we did the mental training. The coach, Mike Janikowski, with the U.S. Olympic team, he just loved the mental. And we just had a really good program going there. And so we did so well after the strength coach was recruited to Cleveland Cavaliers. And the director of sports science went to Milwaukee. So I was first pulled into Cleveland. When LeBron went from Miami back to Cleveland and Kevin Love was brought in, the culture was fractured. The coach had been fired. Things weren't good. They brought me in to consult to try and help fix the mindset and fix the culture, which we did. And we won a championship. And when we won that, Doris, ESPN reporter, asked LeBron on the floor. He's rolling around with the ball in his hand, what did you do to come back from 4-1 down against the Warriors? And he said, we changed our mindset. And that was the work we had done. Then after that, the director who was at the Olympic team had gone to Milwaukee. He had been talking to the strength coach about the work we were doing. So he was recruiting me to go to Milwaukee. And I'll never forget this day. It was the hardest talk I've ever done was doing the BYU devotional, because every word has to be perfect. And you've got that teleprompter. And I just felt so rigid and not – I like to move around and everything. That was hard. As soon as I was done, I jumped in my truck and drove up to do a 3-hour boot camp for the Bucks that were in town playing the Jazz. And there was this – I didn't know much about the Bucks at all. I just knew there was this young guy that they said was really good, and they called him the Greek Freak. And he after I was done, this young man that was slouched on the front chair gets up, and he's like 6'11". And he comes up to me and he says, in his broken English, he's like, "I want to work with you." And I was just blown away by his humility and his willingness to want to learn. And yeah, wonderful human being. It's been great having the opportunity to work with him and the Bucks over the consulted for a number of years. And then as we were getting to that breaking point, so to speak, they asked me to come on full time. And yeah, we ended up winning a championship there too. So that was fun.
I was going to ask you, did you get a ring?
Yeah.
You have a ring.
I have a ring, yeah.
Do you ever wear the ring?
No.
Is it just display only?
Yeah, it's funny. When we were there in Milwaukee, my wife brings the missionaries over and feeds them up, and they always want to take a photo with it. So that's really the only thing we use the ring for. All these missionaries take photos with it. So, yeah.
So, okay, I love when I learn something on these, and I always learn something, but I did not know that you were part consulting with the Cavaliers the year that they won the NBA champ. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So the fact you've had a chance to work with LeBron and Giannis. So let me ask you this then. Having been with two of the greats, maybe the two greatest that are in the league right now, what in your opinion makes them great?
I'm so biased because obviously I'm looking at out of my own lens. It's the mental. I know they're physical specimens. I know that. But if he was here, Giannis was here, he would say, there's other guys that are 6'11 as well, but they're such learners. Learning is everything. They just both of them, they're always learning and they're always trying to get better. And if you're always learning, learning is the opposite to fear. So the more of a learner you are, the more you're just increasing your intelligence and your awareness all the time. And you just don't have fear in life. So they're amazing learners, and just that's the biggest thing for me is, yeah, I really just try what I've learned working with some very, very high-functioning human beings is truth as well. Truth is everything. And I'm not talking about truth from a religious or are you going to get your bottom spanked by your parent if you don't tell the truth. Truth really does set you free. And so I'm just really have learned through the years when I'm talking and coaching these wonderful human beings, I've got to be as precise and exact, and I got to study and do my homework so that what I'm saying is accurate and I can support it with multiple points of truth, which I actually learned studying the Book of Mormon. You got to have 3 points of truth, and the trust factor is everything. So the more accurate and the more precise and the more you build off truth, that's what builds the trust. It's not about me. It's in the end, it's truth. In just trying to study truth, understand truth, teach truth. Truth is the thing that really helps us. That's what unlocks the mind.
One of the really cool side stories with the BYU twist with that Milwaukee team was that Elijah Bryant was on that roster.
Such a good guy. Yeah, I've tried to get BYU guys in there for years because I do the draft. I do all the profiling for the draft. Trying to get BYU guys in all the time. And yeah, we had LeBron, we had Elijah, we had who was the guy at Utah State? Escaped my mind right now. Had him there for a while, too.
Oh, you're talking about he's with the Cavs now?
Yeah.
Sam Merrill.
Yeah, Sam Merrill. Yeah. Yeah, we got him there as well. And there's been a few others I tried to get there, but they get a bit suspicious when I start trying to push for, you know, BYU guys.
It's BYU
all the time.
Guys, I'm telling you, their mental strength is really high.
Yeah. They're like, "Doc, you can't keep doing, bringing in the BYU guys all the time." So, yeah.
What. Is there a common trait in the athletes that you speak with, not just maybe to the level of LeBron and Giannis, but just all the athletes you talk to? Is there common ground that you see with all of these athletes?
I would say that the authenticity is the common ground. That is really what I've seen over and over. The best, the highest function people are authentic. They're not always the most positive. But they're very authentic. They're very real because trust is everything.
Sure.
And it was, I can't remember which apostle it was that taught us this. He said that God loves all his children equally, but he does not trust them all the same. I love that. That just explains so much to me. And that's why that truth is critical. Truth for yourself. Trust so you're honest with yourself. So you trust you, but then others, so they'll trust you as well. So I work hard. I mean, we're all human beings, but I work hard to try to be as precise and exact. And that is where the trust is high. And then they're the ones that bring you in to ask the difficult questions because you give them the real answers and you help them to organize their mind and not just tell them what they think that they want to hear.
Because BYU is such a special place for you, what does it mean to you to be able to work with the athletes that are on campus here?
I love so much coming back here and be able to say and use like BYU language. I feel like I speak two languages. I speak non-religious and religious language. But I love coming back and I'll be like, yeah, it's this, this. And I'm going to great lengths to try to coach and teach mm-hmm. and explain a concept so they can understand how to apply it. I'm like, oh, wait, it's this scripture or it's this. This is easy. It's so much easier to be like, oh, well, it's just this and this. This is, and everyone's like, oh, okay, now I get it. So, but with them, I'm like explaining it from a science. Like I'll use coherent layered. It's coherent layered. It's one skill on top of another, skill upon skill. That's what I'm saying to one of these guys with the Bucks. But I'm like, then sometimes I'll say, it's line upon line. I'm like, wait, they don't get that. So got to switch that language because they don't understand line upon line, precept upon precept. But yeah.
I would assume that there is a correlation. You would certainly be able to answer this question. How much does someone's spirituality or their spiritual health help with their overall mental well-being?
Amazing how many guys, at least speaking for the teams I've worked, how spiritual they are. They're not maybe always religious, but they're very spiritual and I'm able to connect that way. But I'm not afraid too. Like I'm like, this is where I learned it. I'm like, I got a scripture for you today. This is where I learned it. I don't care if you're religious or not, but yeah. I'm just trying to find truth wherever I can find truth. And here's truth. And I've got people over there, they quote the Book of Mormon sometime and send it to me. And well, I'm just like unapologetic about it. I'm like, this is where I learned this. And I just want to learn from wherever I can find it. So wherever I can find truth, I want to share it. And you can choose to do whatever you want. But yeah.
What's the next step in this journey for you?
Wow, that's – I'm not sure. I'm just really enjoying being back here, building a team here of to do the mental strength training and work with our athletes here. I think it's such a critical age and a wonderful opportunity to have them at the academic level. I really love that. So I love working with Tom and Brian and the rest of BYU, Liz, and love being back in Utah. My wife and son are still back there in Milwaukee because finishing up school there, so it's a little bit tricky. But other than that, just – yeah, I just love the opportunity at the university to really teach and to build up just truth. I know I keep coming back to that, but that's really the core of mental strength and mental health is that truth. And I just feel like the world isn't understanding how much we need truth and not using truth as a way that, you know, we're getting in trouble if we're not telling the truth. We need truth. It's for us. It's a source of security and safety. It's the same as it always was, it's as it is now, as it will be in the future, and it's independent of us. So for the more we study truth, the more we understand it, it is the rock, and that's what gives us the greatest sense of control. And you can really eliminate all fear and anxiety the more you really build around truth. I mean, there are some chemical issues that are outside my skill set that are – it's a different field of psychology, but we really can, from a life standpoint, build around truth, create the lives we want to live. So, yeah.
Well, Craig, I appreciate you for coming in and doing this. This was amazing. I have enjoyed this conversation immensely. I hope you enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun. So thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. It's great. That was a great experience. I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks once again to my guest, Craig Manning. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.